Blog Talk Radio.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Anything's possible.
RSD Renegade Radio. Where real guys talk real sports. Allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth.
I want winners.
What's your name, boy?
Watch the game changer.
What's your name, boy?
D-Well.
Now, ladies and gentlemen.
T.O.T. Sports Ph.D.
The world famous.
Ray.
They are who we thought they were.
We need more dollars.
RSG, Renegade Radio. The floodgates is about to open.
Everybody has an opinion.
A man must have a code.
We're taking RSG to the next level.
Hello? You play to win the game.
You could gripe about Mike's game, but I don't see shooting percentage getting in.
I mean, I'm not griping the third overall player on my list.
Is it safe?
No, I blame it on Nintendo. It's provocative.
He's real niggas.
We're not going to make any excuses.
You need to move more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. Can't wait. Can you dig it, sucker?
All right. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. This is D. Wilson. I'm in the building. We got a great show. This is going to be heavy NBA talk tonight. You know, we're going to talk about the incredible series that we had just conclude Game 7. So we're going to spend some time talking about, you know, what's going to happen with the Heat, but also where does Indiana go. We'll look into the final series. We're going to get real deep with this. There's a lot of talk that's been going on today. This is going to be one of those three-man weave type shows where we're going to flow with a lot of it because there's so much energy. You know, the fellas, we've been going back and forth on Facebook and Twitter and everything else is going about this. So we got a lot of pent-up energy going on in the show. And we're going to get into that. Game Changer is going to be coming off the bench in a little while, and so we'll be bringing them in. But, you know, I can't stop. You know, Phil T, you know, the man, I've been looking at all the text and everything else. He's just been doing it. So, you know, I got to welcome to the show and just get a feel for his energy. How you doing?
Listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
Devon, we're going back to the basics this week. You know, RSG, realsportsguys.com. This is our thing, NBA playoff basketball. So we are taking it back to the foundational mission statement of barbershop talk, real guys talking real sports. And so I'm looking forward to getting back to the roots this week. You know, I've been gone the last couple of weeks, and like you said, pent up. I'm ready to let it roll.
See, now, and if you go to at RSG D Wills, which is at RSG DWILS, you will actually see me sitting in the barbershop chair, in the actual barbershop. That's how I'm rolling. I'm just trying to let you know what the feel is. So if you ever want to go back and forth with me, give me what you think, just go to RSG DWILS, RSG DWILS, and on Twitter, and we can go back and forth. But you'll see me sitting in my chair, chilling with my barber, talking that junk. That's how we do it. Just imagine us, Phil is right now sitting in a chair.
I'm
probably in a nice height. I don't know how would you
I'm
do
right
it?
Next
would,
to you. I'm right next to
right
you.
Next right next to me
that's right.
In the height. That's how we roll in on this. One of the things we've been talking about the last couple of weeks is that, you know, one of the exciting additions over the last year has been inside the park, one of the, our big-time additions to the RSG family. And recently, I know we've been announcing on Twitter and Facebook, Art Depe has been is going to be taking a leave from us from the show, but he's going to be part of. We like Wu-Tang. Sometimes our artists go off and they do projects, and then they come back and do stints with us. That's we told you we're the Wu-Tang. But what's good about what we got going on right now is that we have an opportunity to continue to develop our brand. And so I'm fortunate enough to have, two of the members of Inside the Park on the show with us, one new, one old. Right now I got Mike on the air. And Mike, you there?
I am here.
And the thing about Mike is that, you know, Mike is, what you'll learn about Mike, who's been holding it down from the beginning, is that he's versatile. So he's the kind of cat can talk about a lot of different sports, but he just crushes baseball. And I've known him for a long time, been a good friend of mine. You know, y'all had a couple shows on your belt this year, Mike. What has it been like getting back into stretching your legs for the second year and kind of getting it going again? What has the season been like, and what can people expect to hear from y'all this year and the second year?
You know, the second year is always sweeter than the first. And I tell you what it's like. You graduate high school, you say goodbye to your friends, you go to college, and then you come back that next summer, and it's like you never left. You know what I mean? You know, we've been having fun, Hank and I, RJ, and now Lamar coming on. We're just adding to the group. But it's been a great baseball season. You know, a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of surprise teams, and a lot of teams that just disappoint. And most importantly, Hank's been wrong on a lot of stuff. I just got to put that out there. And that drives
me. Yeah, Hank, it is funny. You got that continuum going. RJ was kind of like the Billy Beane using all the stats. You're kind of in the middle, and then, you know, Hank is kind of that old school cat that is like, you're
right,
like that old scout that, you know, I haven't heard a shot off the bat like that since
right.
Hank Aaron. You know that?
Right. Hank is all about the eyeball test.
The eyeball test. And when y'all start talking of numbers, he gets frustrated.
He does. He does his predictions with the magic eight ball and some chicken bones. That's how he makes his But he's consistently wrong, and it makes, you know, RJ and I look good, and Lamar came in, and, you know, it's just not fair. He's just been set up way too nice, you know?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about this, and we'll bring Lamar in, you know, RJ was a lot like Avery Johnson. And I told Lamar that he's kind of coming on like a young Tony Parker. He's got to fit in with the veterans who won a title, and so he's trying to figure out how to make that connection. How are y'all going to help him make his? Because like trying to tame you and Hank is like I listen to y'all. It's hard to tame y'all.
Yeah.
how is he expected to do that?
Well, first of all, he appeases both of us. He sent a lot of flattering emails. I got a cookie basket from Lamar the other day, which was nice. He set the tone right. I don't know if he baked them. They were very tasty, though, and appreciated. So we were setting the tone early. And the best thing about Lamar that I see coming in is that he roots for the Cubs. So, therefore, he has no leg to stand on. He's obviously a true fan, so we respect that. And when your team is as bad as the Cubs are, it's like rooting for the Jacksonville Jaguars, which I believe he roots for as well. You know,
Lamar is the only cat. See, look, Lamar's taking that chair right. He's laughing right now. Lamar's the only guy I know. He's a Midwest guy that likes the Cubs, and I've never heard anybody north of Jacksonville be a Jacksonville Jaguar fan. So Lamar, you hear you've been taking on. I told him you like a young Tony Parker coming in with Ginobili and Duncan, and you got to figure out how to fit in without Popovich taking you out the game. Welcome, Lamar. How you feel, man? How you feel about being on Inside the Park?
I'm happy to be on Inside the Park. What's going on, fellas?
Now, Mike has been saying that you know they're ready to go. They're razzle and dazzle. You know, you kind of got the table set a little bit this week. How are you feeling like you want to contribute to the group?
Just wherever I can fit in. I love to talk sports, and I throw out the stats too, you know. But I've been really studying and looking at everything lately. I'm just very curious to see how everybody else thinks about what's going on at this point in baseball. So I wish I had a little bit more time to talk to you guys tonight, but I'm, you know, getting some shots up with the sprints there.
One thing they don't know about you that you also play a little bit of semi-pro basketball, right? So you all sport, right?
Yep, all sport.
You're trying to see if you really can be that Avery Johnson, get that Avery Johnson contract, right?
Yep, I'm on that Avery Johnson. I'm trying to get that role player, that mid exception, that mid level exception. I can roll with that.
So what about the Cubs, man? What are your Cubs going to do? Because Mike going to crush you. Y'all in the same division. What your Cubs going to do?
You know what? They'll be all right. But, you know, the Reds right there, too. You know, it's not like they're at the top.
So who's going to finish higher, the Cubs or the Reds? And why?
That's a good question. I think at this point that comes down to, I mean, I know – It's one of the biggest factors, but I think health is going to come down to one factor. And then another thing is, if, you know, it comes to a point if the Cubs are out of contention in another month or so, they'll start getting rid of pieces such as Matt Garza and possibly Soriano and other names. So we'll see what happens. But I don't, you know what, if since he stays healthy and they make a move, they might finish a couple games ahead of the Cubs. But, I mean, who knows what to expect from the Cubs right now.
You're saying the bottom is the bottom, right? Both of y'all are going to be at the bottom. It's just who going to eat more? Is that what you're talking about? Mike is not saying anything, but he's not telling you because he just knows that he's on a sinking ship too. So it doesn't matter for both of y'all.
Really?
The Brewers are the bottom of the bottom.
Is if the All-Star break comes, they blow a whistle and the Reds go home and forget to play the second half of the year. That's the only way it's going to happen. But that's all.
I'm going to probably join y'all for a few minutes this Wednesday at 8:30 to kick things off. But what I will say is I'm looking forward to it. Lamar, you're going to be a young Tony Parker, so they're going to beat you up in the locker room. Until you earn your leg, you know Avery's going off to talk to David about some other stuff, and so you're gonna have to figure out to get those shots. You got to get that mid-range jumper. So I hope you're working on that in the gym. And I'm looking forward to you guys. Have a great season. I will be on there with y'all tomorrow night, folks. If you want to hear Inside the Park, it's the best show about baseball. Underground Radio, 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern. On RSG, you can go to realsportsguys.com to get there, or you can go to Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good evening and enjoy it, and talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon, guys.
We're about to transition in. You know, I got my guys into the arena. You know, I think the game changer's in the building. He laced up a little bit. He's lathered up. He's stretched out. His knees are a little bit better than Dwayne Wade's. So
wow,
not gonna have up and down performance.
That's how you perceive me.
He's gonna be a little consistent.
Wow, winning.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Wow, winning.
I'm great, man. I'm ready to get this game seven going and get it popping, man. No D Wade. I'm ready to bring. I ain't gonna complain about touching.
We need more dogs.
Oh, man. Nah, I'm not complaining about touches, man. I'm ready to go. We got a slamming show going. PhD in the house. PhD in the house, ready to rock, playing around with the board.
Right, just having a good time.
Pressing buttons. Pressing buttons like a 6-year-old.
Hey, Game Changer, we told the listeners it's going to be an old school. So it's going to be an old school RSG night tonight. This is going to
right,
be
we're in the barbershop.
The early days, the early folks, the hardcore folks who listen to them early days when we were just really in the barbershop. That's the kind of night we're going to have tonight.
Yeah, ain't going to be no cutesy. Ain't going to be no cutesy drops tonight. Ain't going to be no segment. We're just going to get down and dirty talking about the NBA playoffs and just
I want
it up.
Winners.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. So why don't we go ahead and jump into this conversation? We just had one of the most entertaining Eastern Conference Finals I've seen in a minute. Indiana, Miami, it got rough. It got wild. You know, Birdman.
Bird down.
You know, he took out Psycho T. You know, the cast was getting into it. You know, cats getting teed up. It was beautiful. It was a tough, highly contested series. But honestly, I was surprised personally. The Pacers made it much tougher than I thought they could. Why do you guys think the Pacers made it so tough? I mean, I just didn't see them being able to do that to Miami. I didn't think they were going to have it this difficult with anybody in the East. But the Pacers made it difficult. What do you guys think? D-Wills, what do you think? How do you think the Pacers made this so difficult for Miami?
I think that you never know when somebody's going to wake up. And I think Roy Hibbert waking up created problems. I mean, you could see him mature as the playoffs got deeper and deeper. And I think the confidence he gained, because he didn't play like this during the regular season, really created problems. Because you didn't expect him to play because of the way he played in the regular season. And then just David West being David West, which is he's physical, he's mean, he hurts you when he walks past you. And then you got the young superstar growing up, Paul George. Now, one of the things I said before the series, will he be able to have that moment? He had a couple of those moments. You know, he's learning how to do it. But he had one of those moments that only superstars can have. I mean, he had some dunks from folks that just, you know, wanted to make you run out the street and yell and holler. And you had that combination of belief. And then, you know, they believe they match up well. You know, NBA playoffs is about matchups. And I think certain teams believe they match up well against certain teams. And I think Pacers is one of those teams who really feel like the Bulls, that they match up well against the Heat. And they really can counter with the Heat, and they believe in their heart they can do that. So I think it was those circumstances coming together that made it much tougher, along with Wade struggling, you know, in a way that he struggled and Bosh struggled. I mean, those factors coming together made it a much tougher series.
Okay. So – PhD, do you agree or disagree with D-Will's assessment of why the Pacers made this tough on the Heat?
Yeah, it was Hibbert. And, you know, we have a few theories on this show. And, you know, Luol Deng, 17-7 theory. It's like this series, Luol Deng averaged 29-12-7. He just busted up. Like, he was your number one guy. And that's what Roy Hibbert did in the majority of the games this series. Now, my Roy Hibbert theory, just to refresh some of the listeners out there, is that we don't get really excited about guys like Roy Hibbert. They just don't do it for us. You know, whether it's inconsistency, they don't look or fit the certain role or idea that we have for stars. But I tell you what, my man stepped up. And he's just what the Heat did not want to see to be successful. So, to me, he was a difference. He didn't play as well in Game 7. And, you know, big guys, you got to get them the ball. So I put that more on his teammates and the game plan for not getting him more involved. But as a Miami Heat fan, I was thrilled. with the results of Game 7, and I'm looking onward to the finals.
So we're talking about Roy Hibbert and the Roy Hibbert theory. We gotta really get into this dude, man, because you talk about coming out of nowhere. He didn't necessarily come out of nowhere, because this is a guy who, because of the nature of the center position in the league, is a borderline all-star at his position. But at the same time, as you said, PhD, as Roy Hibbert theory states, yes, he is a very talented player. He's really good, but I just can't quite buy into him.
Yeah. You know, I was talking about this with you guys last week that, you know, all NBA, Tim Duncan, you know, what, 18-9, 18-10 this year. If he was playing in the 80s, this season, not his career, but this season, which was a first-team All-NBA season for a center, he may not even make an All-Star game with those numbers. And so I think when you see a guy like Hibbert dominate, you know, for a whole series against the best team in the NBA, it speaks to how weak the center position is and how much it's evolved. You know, I've said it before, the NBA center position is like the NFL fullback 30, 40 years ago. And what it is now, it's just totally going to be phased out, I think, at some point.
See, I have a better analogy. I came up with this analogy this weekend about NBA centers. And I think it fits really well. Me and my brother was chopping it up, talking about the series and basketball in general. And I said NBA centers are like female rappers. In the 90s, late 80s, it was lots of female rappers. Now, it wasn't a ton of them, but it was enough where it meant something to be the best female rapper. You had your Moni Loves, you had your MC Lights, your Queen Latifahs, you know, your Lauryn Hills, you know, even Missy Elliott, the Bratz. You know, you had cats like that, ladies like that who could actually rap, you know, who were solid rappers. Were they amazing? No, but they were solid rappers. Now, Lauryn could kill anybody. Queen, she can get with anybody in her day. MC Light can get with anybody in her day. Fast forward to 2013, the landscape of female MCs is pretty scarce. You know, to the point where you have somebody like a Nicki Minaj who is kinda a rapper, kinda a singer, who can pass as the best quote unquote female MC out there. So that's what you have today in the NBA, where you got guys who kind of play the post, you know, who are kind of centers, and they can pass as being a dominant big. Because, you know, when you compare them to the 90s, centers of the 90s, it was a lot, it was quite a few high-level cats, you know, who could get it done. And then you fast forward to now, and you see the numbers dwindle over time, and then you get to now where it's like, if you're that one cat who can kind of handle himself on the block, then you the bee's knees. You know, we don't know what – and it switches from week to week. One week is Gasol. The next week, Gasol's – the people want to talk about Gasol being the best. Next week, they want to talk about Bynum, Dwight Howard. You know, we're trying to find somebody to anoint the best center in the league. And I don't even know if it matters. Because who cares if Nicki Minaj is the best female rapper? That's, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, so, and who's your competition?
But what I would say about Hibbert is that there's a couple of things. He comes out of the one school of big men, Georgetown. In the way in which he's developing, with the way he's shooting the ball, using his hooks, using a lot of the 80s moves, if he continues to do that, he's going to eat all day. And it's one of those things, I say, it's a lost art. You know, he bring it back. That move don't go away. That move can transcend anything. And so what I see is, because if you think about it, if you look at his story, they did when I was on the halftime, he could barely walk and chew gum when he arrived at Georgetown. So he like a late bloomer in a lot of different ways. He's finding his stride. The one thing I'm still trying to figure out is that run down the court he got. He got a run that's kind of
that's
the high knee run. The high knee run is taking us back to the '60s. I'm trying to He got some of
that's
that.
That's why you can't quite buy into that, brother, because it's like, what are you doing?
He got no cool points to him. But the thing about he don't care. You know, he like the cat who really don't care if you laugh at me because I'm still going to do what I'm doing. That's what makes him dangerous if he buys into it. You know, he's already talking about the things he has to work on in the offseason. So something like this that gives you confidence, plus he comes from the right school. He comes from a school with, like you said, the Mount Rushmore big man. So there's a legacy around that. So he's going to be an interesting guy going forward with this. But the one thing that's clear about the playoffs is that having a strong, whether they are forward, whether it's LeBron, being able to do something in the post and score easy, like running the football at the end of the game, it makes scoring easy. You don't have to work that hard. And so I think some of these teams are realizing how important that is. And it'd be interesting how that has an impact going forward.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I think you're right, D. Wills. Me and you have gone back and forth on this, and I have to say, you know, you're right. That the playoffs have proven you right, and I'll give you that. I'm totally giving you that. I'm conceding that. You know, you got to have that guy who at least, in this Pacers Heat series, it has been evident that you have to have a guy who, at some point, you have to double on the block because that creates the panic, the rotation out of it. You either have to have somebody you got to double off the pick and roll, or you got to have somebody you can double off the block. But at some point, you have to make two guys guard one. Once you can do that, then that ball movement becomes more deadly where you can get those open looks, those open threes. Because when Hibbert wasn't on the floor, the Pacers were very stagnant. They really
That's
couldn't
right.
generate any offense. But once Hibbert came back out and he had a double, then you start seeing things open up. So I got to tip my hat to you on that. The question I want to ask, and I want PhD to come in first on this one, is who is the real Roy Hibbert, though? That's really what we got to get into. Because is he the cat that gave you 12 points, 8 rebounds, and 2.5 blocks a game during the season? Or is he going to be 21-10 during the regular season, shooting 54% from the floor, 79% from the line? Who is he?
I think right now we have to label Roy Hibbert the ultimate wild card. And wild card is a synonym for inconsistent.
I thought that was Lance Stephenson.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to fight over that one.
We're going to
have to give Lance his own segment after we get done with Roy. We're going to have to talk about Lance Stephenson. But let's focus on Roy. My bad.
Oh, that's fine with me. Roy is just inconsistent, and I don't know if it's one of those things where he needs to be motivated and he rose to the occasion because his team needed him to do so. There were certain things about the Heat with the rivalry that just really ticked him off and got him going, and maybe that's why he stepped up, and it's tough to, you know, reasonably expect that over the course of an 82-game season. I don't know, but I think we've seen enough to know that he has the potential and the talent to dominate like this all season. And 21-10 out of a center nowadays with a couple of blocks is dominating. So I'm interested to see what he does throughout the season. He has stayed healthy, which is typically a knock on most big guys. And his footwork and his post moves have improved so much over the last couple of years since he came in from Georgetown. And also, Game 7 wasn't a good evidence for this, but typically he's playing more ball and fouling less. So I think he has the tools to really develop. If you think about it, this is what Marc Gasol was doing a couple of years ago. He was really inconsistent, but we saw the potential. Different players, but I think Hibbert, given the right tools, and maybe it took Danny Granger to be out this season. Maybe it took for Vogel to design the offense to really, for him to be the center point along with George of the offense. I don't know, but Indiana has something. They've committed to him in terms of a max contract. Now they need to figure out how to utilize and maximize what they can get out of this guy.
Yeah. D. Wills, what did you think of Roy Hibbert walking off the court without shaking hands? I laughed. What did you think?
It's to me, it's a sign of what he understands us to be. And maybe that was a little over the top. But one of the things, I mean, Game Changer, I remember one of the best things you ever said about, you said this about quarterbacks. But I think it applies to any type of player. And I think you also use this in basketball, your ability to self-scout. And this tells me that this is where he's going, is that when he was in his post-game conference, I mean, press conference, he was saying, I got to improve my quickness, because he was analyzing, you know, in order for me to come off on the screen and rolls, I got to be able to improve my foot speed. So in all season, I need to work on my foot speed. He was already thinking about the things that he really needs to focus on to take that next step. And I think there's something about being in the Eastern Conference Finals or the Finals, people either shrink or they grow. And Roy did not shy away from the lights. Now, there's a couple people last night on the Pacers that shied away from the lights, and I knew they were. But he did not. He grew in the moment. He took it on.
Wait. You got to name names. You got to name names. Who ran?
Your boy Hill.
Yeah, he ran.
But the thing about it, I knew this about him before he got there. So this, when we talk about where they need to go, I got some. But he just, you know, you could tell in his eyes. He was like, he was folding like wet noodles. And he's been turning the ball over. But this kid was stepping into the light. He wasn't afraid to challenge it. So I think that's where he's going to go. But it's going to depend, as you know, with the big man, is who you got in the backcourt. Because there are times he's going to do the right stuff, his fundamentals, he's going to be the right stuff, he's going to do the spacing, he's going to do the kind of stuff that Gasol has been doing, but he's going to need somebody to help get him the ball in some space. And I think that has a lot to do with his production in the regular season. They just don't have a good backcourt who knows how to deliver the ball to the post, which is a lost art in the NBA. I watch guys all the time, they don't know how to get the ball to the post where you can score. And
I think nobody
can move
it.
Huh?
Because usually
ain't
nobody
right.
In there.
Ain't nobody in there. Everybody around the 3-point line.
On you're big when they shoot threes nowadays.
That's right.
Like
that's why half of them, they sitting at home watching on TV. You better Oklahoma City, get somebody in the post. Leave it alone. But I think the first step is self-scouting to dealing with inconsistency. When you get to the point where you're beginning to analyze your game and wanting to improve, that to me is an indication that you're going to be more consistent and that you're working to be more consistent.
Okay. Now, we talked about consistent. We brought up Lance Stevenson.
Mad Max.
Wow.
You mean Mad Max too?
Seriously, I think we have to go Lance Stevenson. We can't even go Mad Max no more.
We can't.
I think Lance Stevenson has taken the wild card archetype and pushed it to another level where it's just like, what are you doing? Like 1-on-4? 1-on-4. If Paul George would have done that would have been a bad move. You know what I mean? Like, you're not even the best guy in your own backcourt and you're taking teams 1-on-4. And then the pouting, he's just that dude who you play ball with at the court, and you're like, man, why did I get this dude on my team? Why did I pick up this dude? You know, like, he looks stable, he looked all right when you first picked him up, and then from that moment on, it was just like, yo, man, what are you complaining about? You know what I mean? Like, somebody else gets scoring on, he tells him, let's switch, I got him. Chill, bro, chill. First point of the game. But he getting killed. First point of the game. Right? One possession. We're going to be all right. Let's play this out. Let's see how this goes. We matched up before we came out here. Let's just stick with what we decided we were going to do and see how it goes. You know what I mean? That's him. That's him. He called, you know, he out there on LeBron. Don't talk to LeBron. Come on, man. Have you heard from Deshaun Stevenson since? Stevenson. That's it. That's it right there.
That's it.
That's it right there.
That's
I just figured it out. It's that last name. Leave LeBron alone. You are not ready. Not at all. Anyway, Paul George. Kid had a great series. The moment of the series for him, for me, was when he stutter stepped, blew past LeBron.
Woo!
Came in and chest to chest, yammed on Birdman. Just yammed on him. It gave a little yell, but then Brian came back and said, I'm the baddest man on the planet. It hit like a 30-footer. Now, here's two elements to that. How did you feel about LeBron dapping him down?
I'm cool with it. It's 2013, man. It's a whole lot of things these cats are doing that old schoolers are going to look down on. But it's a day and age, and I thought it was kind of neat. I thought it was kind of cool. And, you know, game recognized game. It kind of put me back in the sense where, you know, LeBron is LeBron. And I remember Pat Riley and Jeff Van Gundy used to get all upset with their players when Jordan would be in town and he'd take them out to dinner, you know, and they'd go out to clubs and whatnot. And that next night, Jordan is killing them on the court. And, you know, in some ways I'm thinking this young pup may not even know that LeBron is playing mind games with him, you know. But at the end of the day, I thought it was cool.
All right, D. Wills, you're old school. You're from the old school.
Yes.
I'm about to answer this question. The one thing I do want to say, every time I see Stevenson, I think about that Bill Cowher moment when he had Greg Lloyd, and he was like, rush the passer. You know, you need somebody who, like, you know, he's hitting his hands on his shoulder pads, trying to get him focused, because he was having one of them Lance Stevenson moments. He's trying to get
right.
You know, feel like Vogel needed to, like, you know, just say, I just need you to do something, just this.
And that's the thing with Lance Stevenson is, what do you do well? I'm what?
Yes. Yes. And
I can't even
focus.
What am I going to tell you to go do? Not be crazy.
Just rebound. Rebound on both ends of the court and give it up. But I digress. What I would say is, when I saw that, it's kind of like, you know, when two boxers fight, somebody hits you a nice shot, and right at the end of the round, they tap gloves like, yeah, that was a nice shot. I'm going to come back out and get you. I thought it was more like that. That it was like, yeah, that was a nice shot. You know, you hit me with a nice shot. We're going to go back to our corners and come out and battle again. So I took it more like that rather than the kind of camaraderie we used to seeing it. I thought it was just like a nod in the head. When you hit me with a shot to the stomach, I hit you in the jaw. Well, those are two good shots. We're going back to the corner. We're going to come out and do this again. So I took it more like that.
I'm kind of in the camp of both of you guys. I saw nothing wrong with it. I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was cool. I thought it was like, yeah, that was a nice dunk he's out, but I got you back. Let's go. Let's keep this going. You know what I'm saying? Let's keep this moving. You know what I mean? And so I appreciated that. Now, here's where rubber hits the road with Paul George. He had some great moments in this series. To me, at times, there were times where he struggled a little bit as well, and you can see some of his youth and inexperience kind of come out. He's 23. That's to be expected. Here's where the rubber hits the road, though. You know, we have our whole club superstar analogy that we use when we're talking about NBA guys in particular and who's in that elite class. Is he getting in yet, or do we got to check his ID at the door?
Yeah, he like young money. He don't quite get to get up in that. He's like Drake in the early years. He kind of, you know, we know you got some star stuff. You know, we just want to make sure you got a couple more hits coming out before we let you in. And I think he needs to have another run like this. If he has another run like this next year, then he gets in. Because he's got all the other tools, but can you have another moment like this? Can you come back is where I would say. I think this was his coming out party. Can you come back to the party? So I'll let you come in because you got the number one hit this week, but you can't come back next week until you have another hit.
Okay. PAZ, what's your assessment? Is he getting past you?
Absolutely. He gets past, but he's got a different type of membership card. He's got one that, you know, I mean, he's got he's got that 12-month, maybe 24-month membership card. So he doesn't have that emeritus that lifetime membership card. You know, you got that one. Well, listen, man, you're going to need to renew in a couple of years, but you're good till then.
Wait, it's a whole job for a minute, but it ain't a free pass, though, bro.
Right. And let me be clear. Let me be clear with that. Yeah.
Okay. And you said as a part of it, he's also has to buy a certain number of dinners to stay in the club. That's about $2,000.
Yeah, see, he doesn't get access to the VIP model section with Bron and Cole and Wade and those cats. You know, he's downstairs on the lower level of the club. You know, still working the floor.
No, I think he gets in on the apprentice, like the apprentice up and coming, you know, card where, okay, we're going to give you a year or two to figure this out, but if not, now we got to move you to the Vince Carter room.
for me, he's still got to work the floor for a little bit. You know, he got to buy drinks, he got to buy a couple rounds for the folks downstairs. He got to get in good with the people. He got to get the people behind him. You know, he's made a little bit of name for himself. Now he's got to build up some steam and get the streets behind him. You know, and once we see he got the streets behind him, he's done enough to get the streets behind him. Then maybe he can get that corporate pass and come upstairs and hang in the corporate suites with the other guys who are at the top of the league. But right now he's got to do some street teaming.
I hear
you. He's got to work that room. You know, build up a rep for himself on the first floor.
I hear you. I moving away from that a little bit.
The wing line is thick.
I see.
You know, Russell looking at him like, he can't get in. He can't get in if I can't get in. Russell looking at him like, he can't get in if I can't get in. Russell ready to stab him.
I see no flaws in his offensive game. Zero.
I'll disagree there.
If he adds a little bit of low post, okay. But – you know, what perimeter players do have low post games in the NBA right now? You know, I mean, count to five, and I'll dare you to get to six. You know, so I think right now his game is as complete as offensively as a Carmelo in terms of what we saw in this series. Now, I haven't watched him enough to know if this series was an anomaly or if this is consistently what he's done this year. But I saw absolutely no weakness in his offensive game. I mean, he can put on the deck. He can get to the rack. He's aggressive, mid-range game, three-point range. I mean, he can do it all, you know, outside of getting on the block.
And I agree with you. He has the potential to do – I see a lot of T-Mac in him where he has that athleticism. He has that size. He can lock up on one end. He can break you down. He can create for others. I think he's just got to tighten up his handle and not be so loose. I think at times he gets loose with the ball, and sometimes he sees stuff that ain't there. You know, a couple of times he make a move and throw a pass to somebody in the first row. But I agree with you on that point that he has the tools. There isn't a lot that he doesn't have the potential to be able to do. I wish he had an effective, just like a go-to move. Because it felt like to me there were a lot of times where the Pacers needed somebody to create a basket and create a good shot, and he was not able to do that. Now, albeit he did have probably the best, if not the second best, perimeter defender in the league on one LeBron James, which, I mean, that make anybody look a little hard-pressed to create some space. But that's the thing with this Pacers team is, are these guys going to take that next step? Or was this just they got a steady diet of a team that was a bad matchup for them, and so some of these guys look a little bit better than they will over the course of 82 because they had a seven-game stretch where they were going against a team that just really didn't match up well with their strength, and so it opened up some stuff that guys may not be able to get on a nightly basis, and that's the whole rub. Like, is Hibbert really a 20-10 guy, or is he 11-8? You know, or 12-8 is, you know, George this 19-7-5, or is he, you know, 17-6-3? Who knows?
But I think that issue is not about them. That their issue, because of the style they play, is their point guard. And so if you put Jared Jack on their team, that team looks scary. It's because you need somebody, they need a floor general who's not scared of the moment, but who knows how to make decisions and get there. I mean, I think that's part of their problem right now. I think they got all the pieces around them, but they don't have the head of it.
Okay, and that's the next piece that we were going to go into talking about, what they need to add. You know, so you think they need to add that ball handler, that general, you know, that guy who can come out and run the floor and run that team.
Yeah, I think if they get somebody like that, I think that's what they need. I think it'll set their defense, and it'll get people shots and spots where they can have success. I mean, because they don't have a legitimate ball handler, and I think over time, George can be that point forward. I think his biggest problem is that he has all these different powers. He doesn't know when to use them. He's like a superhero with powers. He run into buildings because he's not quite sure what to do with them. He needs to do them. He's learning new things every day. That's the problem when you're 23 right. And you can do it all. You learning new things every day. Like, I didn't know I could do that. I didn't know I could dunk over a bird.
Like a young
man
Spider-Man.
Like a young Spider-Man. I didn't know I can climb
right.
up a
there
bird.
You go. There you go.
he didn't know that. So he's finding things out about himself that I think in another year or two he'll control those in the same way LeBron did. But I do think they need a really good point guard because of the way they play, the offense they play. And the other thing is, and they got to figure out how to keep West. If they can get them a point guard and keep some of these guys intact, then they're going to be good to go. And I think, you know, they got to think about what they want to do with Granger. Is there an opportunity to move him, package some things? I mean, I almost think they almost would have been better off with Collison. I don't totally like Collison, but Collison is more of a point than Hill. And they needed somebody like that who could get them into plays because they weren't getting into their offense. I mean, you heard them from the sidelines a couple times. Catch was like, get into the offense. They weren't even getting into the offense. And some of that had to do with the heat, and some of that had to do with they don't have a peer point guard. The point guard they got right now is made for, like, the triangle. Get it down and go to the corner and wait for them to pass to you, shoot three. That's what they got right now.
I think that's a good assessment. PAZ, what do you think about the Pacers and where they can get better?
I think they have all the pieces they need. I disagree with D. Wills a little bit as far as the point guard. George Hill is certainly a third or fourth tier point guard, so any upgrade there would be great. But I think he's a player that's continuously developing. Like, I've seen improvement. Last year was his first year as a starter. That was his first year in Indiana from the Spurs, and I've seen improvement, and I think he will continue to develop. I think their biggest challenge is to keep David West, and hopefully Danny Granger can come back healthy, and they can figure out a way to play he and George together, and hopefully Stephenson, Lance, the wild card, you know, is okay with his role of being a stopper, a defensive stopper, or somebody that they bring off the bench. So I think they have all the pieces, assuming that their young players develop more, which I think is very reasonable to expect, considering they're all fairly young players.
Okay. Yeah, and I think the piece that we can't forget is Danny Granger's coming back. And that's going to add a whole different element when you add a guy who can shoot like he can. As both of you said, keeping West is imperative. He makes them different. He gives them an identity that, you know, if they let him go, I think that to me that would be akin to when the Lakers lost Ariza.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when they had Ariza, and Ariza gave that extra – he wasn't a key. I mean, he wasn't an all-star. He wasn't a major guy, but he gave them that little bit of something extra that allowed them to be great, that allowed them to deal with those quick athletic wings. And it's something the Lakers haven't been able to get back. David West is that kind of player. As you said, D-Wills, you look at him, you walk by him, and you get hurt. He's just physical. And he's a goon. He's a straight goon. I mean, did you remember, this is a guy that walked up to Dirk and tapped him on the face like he was pissing Merkel after the game. You know, that's one of those death taps, like, yo, man, I'm not even going to slap you. I'm just going to do a little tap.
You about David West?
Yeah. You don't remember that?
And him and Haslam was going to go at it in one of those games. I'm like, oh, this might be a real fight. Like, it's MMA.
Yeah, this may be in the palace. Ain't nobody breaking that up.
Because Haslam crazy, too. Yeah, they were. People talk around. Other than Haslam, folks was talking around him. You know, LeBron was talking to himself. One that said something was talking to himself. Yeah, you can't like that.
Chalmers wrote that check. He wrote that check, and Haslam was happy to cash it for him. He's like, move out the way, man. Move out the way. And Chalmers like, cool, no problem.
We were no problems out here.
That's what I love, man. I love to see that passion for each other, for your teammates, man, when guys care. You know what I mean? When guys care, they get after each other. They come in and stand up for each other, man. That's what really endears you to teams in the playoffs and the players in the playoffs is when you see that passion, man. And it was good to see
game
that.
But game changer, we've been too nice. Now, me and Phil T got a little disagreement at the point. I haven't heard your analysis of the point guard position. Because I don't see Hill as a floor general, and I think they need a floor general. But I could be wrong now. I guess I'm not feeling where you fit on that.
He needs some more rationale, PhD.
Well,
I'm trying to figure out, he's not a natural one.
Sure.
I'm trying to figure out where the improvement is coming from.
Sure. So I don't think you need a floor general nowadays in 2013. Perhaps, but I think what you need is somebody that can make open shots when you have strong offensive threats like they have in George and Hibbert and West, guys that are going to create space. I mean, look at the Heat with Mario Chalmers and Cole. When those guys are making open shots and they can defend the other point guard, I think that's good enough in today's game, you know, especially if you have playmakers on the offensive end. So you know, and I think Hill does that. Hill can do that. He can make open jump shots. He's a decent defender, you know. Yeah, so for those reasons, I think that they can spend their money elsewhere in terms of keeping the pieces they have together. I mean, this team, man, they play for each other. The Pacers have shown me a lot. And so I'd rather see them build on what they have in terms of bringing in a new piece that may change the dynamics a lot.
But the number one reason why they lost Game 7, they had 15 turnovers in the first half, and I was watching them throughout the playoffs. And one of the reasons why you have so many turnovers like that is because you don't have somebody who can get you in a set where people get good shots. So if you look at, like, Memphis, particularly if your strength is having really good post game, and if you look at Memphis and have what happens when you have a good floor general, you get shots where you're supposed to get shots. And they didn't have that much. They don't have nearly the offensive firepower as Indiana. And I think the reason they went through the regular season near the top in turnovers. So that tells me that they don't have somebody who is getting them into sets, getting them the right type of shots, who can get them out of danger. And if he's not going to do that, then you're hoping Paul George then matures and can do that. He can be your point forward. And I don't think that's a good. I think that's a team that needs a point guard. He don't really need a point guard. They have plenty of ball handlers. But
so would you move, say, Hill and Granger's expiring contract? I think Granger has one more year, and Hill has at least another two or three. Would you move those two for, say, a Conley to fill that hole?
I might look at a Conley, or if you think Hill is going to mature, if I don't know what their cap situation is, if they could get a Jared Jack, let's say Jared Jack comes off the bench in the way he did in Golden State. If you get, I'm just saying a Jared Jack type that can do that, then maybe you got to, you know, what Jared Jack did down the stretch for Golden State late in games, he was handling the ball. You know, maybe you do something like that, then Hill can go and play off the ball. I mean, you need maybe a more veteran somebody if you think this kid can be that. They need to find some type of insurance because right now I don't have anybody come off. I mean, Augustine's not doing it. So
right.
I think if you believe in him the way that you believe in him, I'm just not sure he's that type of guy, and I think their team needs that. But if you believe that, then if you can find a Jared Jack type and allow for him to mature, then that might be a route. That's the only other route I think you might take, unless you did a move like you just suggested.
Mm-hmm. And they had Collison. They had a guy that fit that mold. You know, I would see a Collison and a Jack really on the same level in terms of talent, being floor generals, somewhat limited offensively, but can get the job done, you know, on a daily night, get you 12 to 15 and get you into your sets. And I just thought they were underwhelming with Collison. You know, I mean, it was a guy who demanded the ball. The offense has to run through him. And to me, sometimes when you have a lot of dynamic offensive guys, sometimes the point guard can take away from that, especially one that needs the ball to be effective. And I think Hill is less of that. I agree, an upgrade at point guard would really help them. But I think when you have limited resources in terms of the salary cap and try to figure out your team dynamics, you know, I'm not sure if an upgrade at a point guard would get them more mileage than trying to figure out what they have. You know, because if Granger comes back healthy, they're not playing a Jared Jack and a Hill. You're playing either or down the stretch. When you figure you got Hibbert, you got West, and you got two premier wings in Granger and George.
So the thing you have to do is you got to have somebody who gets you in the sets. So the Heat, if everything breaks down, LeBron gets them into the right set. And that, because you can't continue to turn the ball over. I mean, sometimes that gets you by, but against elite teams, that's going to kill you. So it costs you less. See, if you only turn the ball over 7 times in the first half, they in the game.
That's right.
If you turn the ball over 15 times, that means you got to have somebody who can bring pressure. You know, and I don't know if they're going to turn. I don't know if the Heat are going to turn over San Antonio like that. Because Parker can break that pressure. So the difference of what a point guard does with those bigs, because you got to be able to get the ball to the post. So that, you know, those are things. Their strength is in the post right now. I mean, they got other great guys, but the one thing they have that a lot of people can't match up with are those post players. How do you get the ball? There's somebody got to feed them. So I think that's my – so, yeah, they're going to have to figure it out, but the bottom line is they got to cut their turnovers down. Does Granger cut their turnovers down? I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to break it up. Break it up. Go back to your corner.
We tapped gloves like we did at the end of the corner. It was a good shot.
That's right.
That was a good shot.
Now, Miami advances.
Keep your guard up. I will Floyd Ortiz you now. Keep your guard up. Protect yourself at all times.
Protect yourself at all times. Well, Russia.
Hey, I will fair but farm you. I'll allow it.
You know, she
look good to me.
She's wicked.
Man, we got to touch on that, man. We got to touch on Floyd signing up to fight Canolo. We got to talk about that. But first, we got to finish talking about this basketball.
Oh, man, I know, right? We'll come back,
but,
man.
So Miami
signatures are not just signatures.
Yeah, Miami advances. What weaknesses did Indy expose out of the Heat as we move in? And if you're the Spurs, what were you watching and be like, yeah, that's where we're gonna go early on and see how they adjust? You know, PhD. What weaknesses did Indiana expose in the Heat, if any?
Oh, a huge one. The games will be every other day. You tell Timmy. Make sure you're getting your 8 to 10 hours of sleep because we're giving you 20 to 25 touches. Period. I mean, their interior defensive guys are – I mean, Chris Anderson, as well as he's played, this cat was playing in China a few months ago. You know, I mean
– Birdman.
That's right. So you have to hit them in the middle, man. You have to. You have to hit them in the middle.
Okay. And it did get exposed, and he got by for a long time during the regular season, winning games, playing with a small ball lineup, and it just doesn't seem like that lineup is effective anymore. At least it wasn't effective in this series. Do you think they're going to go back to that? Because I was looking at a stat earlier, and they only had their small ball unit out on the floor for 3 minutes during the series. And that's that unit of Chalmers, Wade, LeBron, Battier, and Bosch. Do you think they'll be able to get that lineup in particular on the floor more in this series? Because what happened against the Pacers is that Battier just could not handle David West.
David West was just banging
Battier. It was brutal.
but that's what I think. I think it's fool's gold because Indiana has two unique bigs. They hurt you. Like, they're physical. You know, Hibbert takes up space in the lane, takes the lane away. That's not Duncan. Duncan can score, but he's not punishing you the way those two bigs are punishing you. Splitter is doing well, but he don't punish you the way West. And so I think, plus San Antonio put their guns on and playing up tempo. They didn't build it on a half-court game. And so I know a lot of guys were saying it, and I think it's going to be fool's gold. And I think, yes, they're going to go into Timmy, but you know, I don't think he beats you up. He hit me from the ashy elbow. He'll get in the post, but his post, he ain't like guarding David West down the post. He's going to score on you, but he's like, I was thinking about today, Timmy is like, he like cutting you with 1,000 slivers versus David West is basically dashing you with a dagger. Like, he's stabbing you, and Timmy is cutting you with razors. They both hurt. They hurt differently than somebody just banging you in the chest. And I think that's the difference. And I don't know if that doesn't allow you to put that lineup on the floor, because I'm very comfortable with the Heat matching up that way. So I'm not sure if they go – because that's not the style San Antonio's been playing. And they don't punish you. Those big men will score – but they're not going to take a lot out of you like a David West and a Roy Hibbert.
Okay. And see, you know, but then the X factor becomes Tony Parker. And what do you make of old French Tony? Because the Frenchie's balling. I mean, he's playing at a high level.
Oui, oui.
How are they going to match up with the Frenchie, with the Frenchman?
Woo.
Well, I think we need to apologize to Tony Parker.
Yes.
We have been putting together top five point guard list for the past 5 years, and this cat rarely, if ever, makes a top five list. Recency effect says your recent behavior plays a big part in our perceptions of you. So now we put together a top five list. This cat's coming in at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, somewhere in that top five. And so I just want to go out there and say, Tony, I'm sorry. That's it.
I agree. I will give my apology as well. My bad. I didn't know.
I apologize. I was wrong.
My bad. I didn't know. I claim ignorance. I'm no longer ignorant. What do you want me to say?
Yeah.
No, but Tony is killing it, and he's killing it. He still has that blinding speed, and you forget how this guy is still pretty young. I mean, he's 31, which, I mean, he's getting on the wrong side of 30, but yet and still, he still has that blazing speed. And it also, his game for the last 3 or 4 years has never really depended upon his blazing speed. It seems like he's gotten more savvy at using screens and changing speeds more so than just going one speed. You know, a guy like John Wall's got one speed and that's go. Whereas Tony Parker has about, you know, he has about 6 or 7 gears he can shift through, and he shifts through them effortlessly in one possession. You know, he can give you super slow, you know, lull you to sleep. He can hit you with a mid-level speed, slow back down, and it immediately transitioned to top speed. And that's what makes him really difficult to guard. It's going to be really interesting to see how the Heat handle him and how much time LeBron spends on him. Because, you know, that's your ultimate. If you're Spoelstra, that's your ultimate fire extinguisher. You know what I mean? Can't get going too much, get LeBron sprayed. You know, get it, bring LeBron out, put him on him. Hey, enough of that. Which, for LeBron, you know, I think we have to really start to look at this dude like, man, this dude is a bad man. Like, there's no area of the game where he doesn't have a meaningful impact on the outcome.
LeBron James is top 10, dead or alive. I'm just going to put it out there.
I can't argue with that no more.
And that wasn't a question. That was a statement.
Yeah, I can't argue with that no more. I don't know where D-Wills is, but that's where I'm at.
He's all in. I said once he won that championship, he's moving up on the list. And, he's just doing it at a different level. I mean, he's in that Matrix type, whatever kind of. I mean, he's doing some stuff. He's in my top 10. I just got to figure out who I'm kicking out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might have to revisit that because if he's coming in, I know at least with mine because he wasn't in my top 10. So he wasn't in mine, so somebody's got to come out. I got to go to the drawing board and have that personal conversation as who's coming off my list.
I would say you'd have to take Kobe out, but, you know, Kobe was probably 49 on your list.
Yeah, he's somewhere down there on my list. So speaking of Kobe, since you said his name, since you brought him up, let's go ahead and talk about it. You know, the Spurs advanced to their fifth final. Well, yeah, just their fifth finals. Their fifth finals. They're going for their fifth championship in the last 15 years. To me, that hands down qualifies as a dynasty. You got a 15-year run. Well, you're talking about being relevant, being in the conversation to win championships. Of course, they didn't get a whole lot of them consecutively. They never had that big run that, you know, we really look at dynasties and define them by. But something about longevity, man, you can't really argue with it. And the Spurs have that. Well, with that, this entire run has spanned Tim Duncan's career. Now, the question I got to ask is, general public opinion says Kobe Bryant has been the most dominant player over the last 15-plus years. I'm going to have to say I probably put Duncan ahead of Kobe. Yes, Kobe has more championships. But Duncan's win percent, he has a 700 win percent. His teams have a 700 win percentage. That's consistency. That's consistent dominance.
Yeah.
Over 15 years, I mean, we'd be hard-pressed to find another run in sports, in any sport, where you have a team that wins 70% of their games over a 15-year period.
Yeah.
So, for me...
And on top of it, he was given the keys when he walked in the door. I mean, few times you walk into a locker room where a Hall of Famer gives you the keys and say, young boy, drive the car. So, I mean, you got to talk about it from the time he walked in, he was the man for 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, as Young Jeezy said, last I heard, I was the man on these streets. that's Duncan's mentality. That's Duncan's mentality. You know, he got to the finals again, you know, looked around and said, you know, last I heard, I was the dude out here. You know, And yes, he's not extremely marketable. Yes, he's got this flat affect. You know, his emotions, he never smiles. He's not shucking and jiving like the White. He also doesn't have the scowl like a Z-Bo. You know, you can't. There's nothing to mark. There's nothing there. You can't even, like, not like him. You know what I mean? Kanye West once said, whether you love me or hate me, you're going to feel a certain way about Ye. You know what I mean? And that's not the case with Duncan at all. All right? It's easy to just be like, yeah, he's great. So, you know what I mean? I know one Tim Duncan fan. One. you know legions of people that support LeBron. You know legions of people that are riding for Kobe. Even guys like Carmelo has big blocks of fans. I know one Duncan fan. Period. I mean, but that's how Timmy is. But I think because of that, people have ignored the impact that this guy's had on the league over his career. And a guy like Kobe,
who is more marketable, who is more out there, who is more kind of a hot button guy, has gotten a lot more attention and a lot more pub, probably because he plays in L.A., he plays for the Lakers, which is a flagship franchise. That doesn't hurt either. Where do you whose era was it? When we go back in history and we talk about this window of time, whose era are we going to give this? Who are we giving this era to? Is it Kobe's or is it Duncan's?
Well, I mean, people are ranking, you know, Duncan as the best power forward of all time. I mean, he's moving into that little room. And when you talk about these championships, you know, he's still the one, you know, everybody else is 2A on his team. I mean, Parker's had some great ones, and yeah, they talk about the MVPs, but Duncan has been that guy through all those runs, and he set the dinner table, and he set the standard. You say he had, and like you said, he's done it with different styles, different teammates. I mean, he's had his core group, but they've changed styles. They changed. I mean, you think about the people who play with Duncan. Some of the cast, the who's who. I think what Ori they had. You know, everybody's been through there. I think Steve Smith went through there, didn't he? So it was, you had everybody make that, and Duncan's kind of been this straw that stirs it all the way through. I think you can make a good case that it's his era. I would support that. I wouldn't argue that. Because I think it's been consistent and it's been at a high level. He hasn't had any dips.
Okay. Any naysayers to that? Anybody? What argument would the boy Damon Williams say?
He gonna argue that, but you know, I know you probably come back with the win shares on him, and then he come back with some kind of regression analysis, and then I lose focus. So I think everybody would probably debate it, but it's because Duncan is chilling back there on drinking a soda on the Riverwalk. He's not out there like that, and. He's like, every time you turn up, he's there. He's like the reliable person that's always there. You know, you got an emergency, you look over, he's there. You had a wedding, you look over, he's there. He's there all the time, and you take him for granted. And so I think we have to unpack that. But if you look at the numbers, you know, it'd be a tough debate. And for the most part, he was the dog from the day he walked in. That wasn't true for Kobe. Kobe kind of had this, you know, he was there as a key component, but he didn't walk in the door as a top dog. Duncan walked in the door, top dog, got the keys from the Hall of Famer. That's undeniable. And never gave him back.
And I want to take this conversation a step further. Let's look over to the bench. You got Popovich, and you got Phil. Now, Phil's run extended an era beyond this because he had the Jordan years with the Bulls. You got a bunch of rings there. But, again, over this span of the last 15 years, who would you rather have as your coach of your team? Would you rather have Popovich or would you rather have Phil?
Ooh. I'll let Phil do that. Well, I'll let you go at that one first, Phil.
I think both of these questions are excellent questions, the one with Duncan and Kobe. But you put this one in front of me with Phil and Pop. I would go with Popovich. And to me, you can't go wrong with either one, but I would clearly put both feet. I mean, I'm not putting my toe in the water. I'm jumping. I'm cannonballing in behind Popovich. And the reason being is I feel like he's done as much as Phil has done, but with less. And I know some people, even myself, may argue, well, there's an art of managing and servicing huge egos. Like, and Phil has done more of that in terms of the players that he's had to coach. But if you look at it in Chicago, I think Phil always had two of the best 10 players in the league. You know, he always had the best player, in my opinion, in the league when he won his championships with – Michael, obviously, with the first six, and then with Shaq and Kobe with the last three. Or, wow, man, how many? He's won five with L.A., is that right? Or four? Five.
He won five.
Five.
He won them all.
Yeah.
Yeah, he won all Kobe teams.
Right.
Coach.
I just started reading his book, 11 Rings. I can do that math. So I think it's a tough one, but with Popovich, you don't get all the drama. And that's when I'm starting – getting a little excited right now. But
yeah,
when I'm starting a franchise, I want a coach that if I have an issue with him, you know, if I'm a GM or I'm an owner, if there's an issue, we're going to keep it in-house. We're going to do it the Belichick way. We're going to do it the Popovich way. With Phil, Phil's going to get on the radio and try to get his man, I'm not trying to have that. I'm not.
I'm not interested.
I'm not interested in that. I'm not. And if that means I get five rings instead of 11, okay, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that, especially considering Popovich has done more or just as much with less, in my opinion.
Okay. Very sound, very, very sound, sound assessment, very sound argument. D. Wills, do you have any qualms? Where do you stand on Pop versus Phil? Do you disagree with PhD's assessment of the situation?
Well, you know, my problem, and I got to try to just check my bias at the door. You know, I'm a Piston fan, so there's some things. Popovich has done it different ways. So he decided, you know, a few years ago, he's going to play up-tempo. And he realized he was going to do that as a way of actually preserving Duncan. So I probably would go with Pop because I think he does all the things right, and he doesn't necessarily need stars to win. He has one star. I mean, he doesn't need three stars to win or two stars to win. But if he has, you know, he's obviously had Duncan, but he knows how to put pieces around. I guess I agree with Phil about doing more with less, but I think he's been a little bit more innovative. Where, you know, Phil clearly has this, he hasn't used a triangle, but he clearly has a triangle. He has a way he does things. Popovich has been innovative and changed with his personnel and still been at a high level. You know what I'm saying? If you think about what he's done over time. And so I might, in one of the few instances, would go with Phil. But there's a lot of coaches I would challenge with Phil. I would Chuck Daly. I put him up against Phil. There's a lot of coaches I put up against Phil in addition to Popovich.
It seems as if you guys are not believers in Phil Jackson as hands down the greatest coach of all time.
No, I'm not. Well,
no, I think he's in the little room. I definitely think he's in the little room.
He would go to the little room again.
Right.
But
little bitty room.
I know Popovich not letting him get the big piece of chicken. I'm getting that stare like.
Right, so he's in a little room, but does he get the big turkey leg?
Right.
Is he getting the big chicken?
I'll beat you over the head with a turkey leg with 11 rings on it. You touch it. And you'll believe Pop would do that. I mean, Pop has done enough, and maybe this is more about Duncan. You know, he's created a culture where he can really get in and really coach his players. And there's something about him being able to do it in a league where you say that the players own it. And that gets back to Phil's point, that he has a way of letting them understand the sacrifice that they buy into. And I think that has something to do with Duncan, but I also think that has a lot to do with Popovich.
Yeah, and I agree. I think him and Duncan were the perfect combo. I think, you know, stuff happens. It just works. And this was a combination that just worked. And when you have that, you get success. But on top of that.
And we should get Steve Kerr on to see what he would say. He played for both of them.
It's true. He did.
We have to figure out how to do that. It'd be interesting to have him answer that question. He played for both of them. And that's the thing is that both of these.
Pop in particular has had multiple pieces come through that team, and there have been many different configurations of that roster in San Antonio. And I think there have been two consistent things. One is that you have the steadying force of Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker as your core. But then around that, Pop has always been open to playing young guys and developing young guys.
And to me, that is what has allowed this run to extend so much. Like, you know, people come into that, you know, guys come into that veteran team, a veteran locker room, and you expect young, as young guys, you probably anticipate, I'm not going to get a whole lot of run. Pop will play you. Pop will live with your mistakes. He will coach you through your mistakes, so because he knows he's going to need you at some point. You know, and that's where he gets that. That's where he gets that buy-in from young guys. Is that you're going to make mistakes. I know you're going to make mistakes. My job is to coach you through those mistakes. If you knew it all, then why the heck am I here? You know what I mean? Otherwise, I'm just subbing people in and out of the game and calling plays.
That's right.
And I think that's where Pop is a little bit different. Phil is more of a personality manager. Phil is like a good shrink, you know, and you need that. With certain teams, you need that. You need a guy to manage egos. It's the NBA. Every dude there has always been and has always been told that he's the best around because he has been. He's the best in his neighborhood. He's the best in his high school. He was the best in his state. He was the best at his college. You know, that's how guys who get to the NBA, that's how they are. I mean, that's the kind of a top 1% athlete basketball player you're talking about. For me, you got to have that person to be able to manage that kind of a locker room. The other thing, you got to have a guy who can teach. And I think that's where Popovich, if you're giving these guys ratings, that's where Popovich's bar might be a little bit higher than Phil's. You know, because Phil gets a lot of credit for the triangle, but that's Tex Winter. You know, Jim Clemens was a great coach, too. He came up with a lot of schemes, and I think that's where Phil kind of was more of a CEO. You know, I'm going to get the right people in the right spots. I'm going to manage the – I'm going to let them do the X's and O's. I'm going to have a say in it. We're going to talk about it. We all going to have input. But what I'm going to focus on is getting these guys to play as a team, to sacrifice for wins, and to come together on that front. And Pop does the same thing. He has guys who he works with who help take some of the X's and O's, load off of his plate. But then Pop is also a teacher. He also still likes to teach guys the basics of the game, and that's why he gets the Kawhi Leonards, the Danny Greens, the Gary Neals, the Patty Mills, Tiago Splitters, DeJuan Blairs. That's where they get production out of those guys because he's built those guys up. None of those guys was highly thought of coming in, but they're all key players, and he teaches them to fit into the system. So I probably lean with Pop myself because I think with Pop, you can extend your run much longer, where Phil, you kind of got to get some guys who already get it, who already are kind of ready to roll, proven. They know the game. Where I think Pop, you can bring in different kind of pieces, and as long as they have the skill set, he can get them on board. And the other thing that Pop is great about is if you ain't fitting in culturally, you ain't fitting in culture-wise, you're gone. You're out. And so guys get it right away. So, you know, I think I have to go with Pop. So we got about 5 minutes left. So we got to pay some bills. So let's go ahead and do that real quick. Like, now we're gonna get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right. Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. We know how it goes. PhD.
We need more dogs.
Tracy McGrady. He might be the X factor in this finals matchup with the Spurs and the Heat. He played very well against Memphis.
Yeah, if T-Mac gets the ring, does that change our perception of him?
Nah.
Good question.
He spent the first 6 years, couldn't get past the first round. He kicked back the first round of his first 6 years. He might get nothing.
That's just a joke. It's totally a joke. How ring happy we get as a society, man. Count these rings, man. Sports fans. You know, I just have to throw that out there, man. That was a joke me and my brother had to chuckle about, talking about T-Mac, you know. Just to get into the Hall of Fame, now he's got a ring. D. Wills, you know how it goes, brother.
Yeah.
We need more dogs.
I'm going with LeBron James. And really it was about the moment when he realized he had to go back to Cleveland. You know, Biggie talked about going back to Cali. He had to go back to his Cleveland mindset. And he had to look at the other two and realize, you know, I'm not having it. You know, they're not gonna be clowning me. And you can see the moment where he said, I don't care how you my boys, but there's something bigger than this. You either come with me or you stay there, but we ain't leaving. And the guys try to do what they can do to come with him. And that, for me, is just another level of his growth that I'm appreciating. And he even talked about it on the air after the game, that he got into him. And that's something that you would never hear LeBron say in years past.
Okay. So, for me, my dog of the week is a co-dog of the week. I have a co-dog of the week. It's fitting. Bring it back full circle. Grant Hill, Jason Kidd. Co-dogs of the week. Both of them wrapping up banner careers. Jason's much more stellar than Grant's. But Grant was just – the way he handled everything in his career, this is a guy who could have went way left after things didn't go well. He kept plugging away. He came back. He salvaged the last few years of his career and was able to play to almost 40 years old. That's unbelievable. Both of these guys, in their primes, were all-time talents. You know, Jason Kidd being a guard coming out of Cal who couldn't shoot, a guard coming out of Cal who all he really could do was everything else but shoot. You know what I mean? And so him being able to carve out a long career as a point guard who flirted with a triple-double every night and then later in his career turned himself into a spot-up shooter just speaks to this guy's basketball IQ, his love for the game and his work ethic and his approach towards the game. And then you got Grant Hill. You know, in baseball you have the term five-tool. You have to view Grant Hill as what you would call a five-tool basketball player, a guy who could do everything on the court, did everything on the court really well. I mean, he was LeBron minus about 30, 40 pounds back in the day before he started having ankle problems. Just an unbelievable player, great statesman for the game. Hats off to both these guys for finishing up Hall of Fame career. So that does it for this week's edition of Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSU Rec. Renegade Radio. Holler at you next week. This is RSG Crew signing off. Peace.